Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning and welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. This show's all about science in all its different forms with some rather cool music as well. You've got Julian Paul here live. We'll be talking to our PG later in this hour. And our guest speaker this week is Chris Dale. He swapped around with Phil Muffett, who came on last week, and Chris is going to be talking about obesity. Now, last week I mentioned that in the news it said millions of people will be summoned for annual weigh-ins at their GP surgery under new NHS guidelines to tackle obesity. Wow. Then this week I read another article that said fewer than 1 in 10 people achieve healthy aging by reaching their 70s without at least one major disease or impairment, a study has found. But scientists have identified a simple diet to help middle-aged people stave off decline in later life. Researchers from Canada, the US and Denmark, who studied more than 100,000 people and followed them for 30 years, found that only 9.3% of older people could be classed as properly healthy. They found the participants in this group were those with diets rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, unsaturated fats, nuts, legumes, and low-fat dairy products. Ooh. All very interesting
We're
stuff.
Doing well, aren't we?
We are indeed. before I forget, the Sheffield Photographic Society annual exhibition is now on. It started yesterday. It's at Sheffield Cathedral. It runs until next Sunday, the 6th of April. It's all good stuff. Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society and is a regular on this show, has several of his photographs in that exhibition. It's well worth a visit, and the cathedral is amazing as well. Next up, reminder, RHS, Royal Horticultural Society, has launched a peat-free email advice service for all gardeners. That's the first for the RHS. Normally it's for members only, but you can email them at peatfree@rhs.org.uk for any queries you might have about going peat-free, as we all should be. Next up, hedgerows.
Yes, the first signs of new leaves are appearing on hedgerows in a green wave spreading northwards across the country. Hedgerows are remarkable. If all of Britain's hedgerows were lined up end to end, they would stretch 700,000 kilometres, 1.5 times the distance to the moon. And hedgerows do more than just mark field boundaries. They help shelter fields from wind and so help prevent soil blowing away. They give homes for wildlife and they link up wild habitats and shelter livestock. Hedgerows help to prevent flooding by slowing water running off fields, by capturing rainfall and absorbing excess water from the soil thanks to their deep roots. Hedges even help to clean up traffic pollution by trapping pollutants on their leaves and even filtering out harmful microscopic particles. There is also increasing interest in how hedgerows help combat climate change by absorbing and storing carbon in the soil. A recent study found that hedgerows can increase soil carbon by almost half compared with adjacent grassland, storing 40 tonnes more carbon per hectare. The Climate Change Committee, which advises the UK government, has called for a 40% increase in hedgerows by 2050. Simply allowing existing hedges to grow bigger could also double the capture and storage of carbon.
Who knew? You won't look at hedgerows in the same way. So these benefits can also apply to gardens. More than 40% of Britain's 23 million gardens still have a hedge, often used as a boundary marker as well as giving privacy. But the need for more hedgerows is urgent. After about half of Britain's hedgerows was lost between 1940 and 2000, mostly in England, due to intensive farming. After the war, the government even encouraged farmers to strip out hedgerows to make farming more efficient with financial incentives to remove hedges. But recently there's been an upsurge in new hedges, with the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs setting a target of planting and restoring 45,000 miles of hedgerows by 2050. Evergreen by the Darling Buds, because we're talking about hedgerows. Before I forget as well, British summertime starts tomorrow. Clocks go forward or march forward plus 1 hour at 2 o'clock tomorrow morning. Don't forget to change your clock. Some of them will change themselves. Next up is this week's environment updates.
Yes, Thursday, 20th of March, was the warmest spring equinox day since 1972. With temperatures reaching 21 degrees Celsius, yet 48 hours later, the rain was so heavy in Yorkshire that parts of the M18 were closed while specialists worked to clear the floodwater. This is not good news for humans, let alone for wildlife. Early spells of good weather can spell disaster for wildlife if they are then followed by a cold snap.
English language is marvellous.
Coaxing animals out of hibernation and trees into blossom earlier than usual. According to a new study by Climate Central, spring is our fastest warming season, with temperatures 2 degrees Celsius higher in England in the past 50 years. This change may seem small, but it causes mismatches of timing in the food chain, because migratory birds time their arrival and breeding to when their prey is at their peak. Likewise, if tree blossoms early, there are fewer pollinators about, meaning when the bees finally arrive, there may not be enough food. Without pollinators, the fruit sets badly, then wasps and birds that rely on that fruit also suffer. and the cycle continues. Ecologists are continuously tracking these trends in order to measure the impact of our changing weather patterns on wildlife.
Elsewhere in the news, the UK government has announced the introduction of a new natural history GCSE aimed at promoting better understanding of the natural world. Catherine McKinnell, the Education Minister, said it would also teach young people how to contribute to the protection and conservation of the environment locally, nationally and internationally. The government will consult on the content of the course later this year with a focus on providing students with opportunities to engage with local wildlife.
Meanwhile, dozens of new community orchards are popping up every year, according to the Orchard Project charity, providing free fruit and a haven for wildlife. Community orchards differ from commercial ones by being free of insecticides. With the trees more spaced out, there's going to be some maggoty apples, there's going to be some aphids, but they are actually supporting ecology. Guy Barter, the chief horticultural advisor at the Royal Horticultural Society, said...
Interesting, eh? Bird flu has been found in a sheep in the UK for the first time. The UK's chief vet announced, the other day actually, not yesterday, raising concerns that the H5N1 virus is increasingly jumping from birds to mammals. But scientists insisted it was not yet a threat to humans, pointing out that sheep on the small farm in Yorkshire had been kept in the same area as free-roaming ducks and chickens, a situation which would not be replicated in larger industry-scale farms.
On a happier note, a rehabilitated grey seal from Germany has amazed marine conservationists after it travelled 320 miles to the East Yorkshire coast. The four-year-old female seal, identified by an orange flipper tag, was found malnourished and taken for treatment in
the Seehund Station Friedrichskoog centre in Germany. I thought it'd help you out there. Well, which placed a tracker back in 2021.
She was spotted for the first time by Yorkshire Wildlife Trust, that's YWT, researchers during a seal survey in December 2024. Since then, the charity said it had been seeking verification of the seal's identity from the German Rehabilitation Centre, which has recently been confirmed, but the seal has not been sighted since. Or yet, the YWT advises people to enjoy the sight of seals at a distance and stay quiet, as well as keeping dogs on a lead.
And finally, GB Energy, the government's state-owned energy company, announced its first investment with £200 million for schools and hospitals to install solar panels. The organisation, the board of which held its first meeting in Aberdeen last week, said each school would save an average of £25,000 a year, and NHS sites could save up to £45,000 per year.
Don't expect you won't be disappointed, and don't judge of your love. We'll be right back.
nice bit of Santana there, or Diva Dip as it was known at that point, for Is the Morning Sun. We're talking about the government's new state-owned energy company, GB Energy. Of course, this is the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have RPG on the line.
Science.
Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
On this sunny morning, the day of the eclipse, as you reminded me.
Yes.
Very bright, so I think if you want to stand a chance of looking at it, certainly the way it is at the moment, you need some very strong filters, or you need to do a pinhole effect and project it.
Yeah, as Phil Muffet said last week, it's very dangerous to look at the sun. You've only got one pair of eyes.
Absolutely, so I'm still seeing spots at the moment from having a quick glance, so... very funny, but thought what I'd talk about this week, just fit it in if we've got time. I mentioned a couple of weeks back now, I think, that Sheffield University had done some research into black holes, and they were hypothesising that rather than the point of the black hole is everything's sort of transferred down into what's called the singularity, and then is crushed out of existence. But they hypothesise that there's a white hole possibly generated on the other side of that singularity. So they're looking at the whole sort of balance in physics of what the universe is and what it's doing. And the thing that sort of caught my attention was that I think in the US and Australia, they started to look at the one of the things that came out of the Big Bang Theory, which is, you know, the universe was created from a massive explosion and everything's been moving outwards from that point. And what they found was there were some irregularities about the speeds that things were moving at. And so they started to sort of dig into things, and I guess one of the rule of thumbs that came out of what I was looking at is when you look at our universe, we don't actually see more than about, it looks like 5% of what's there. And 95% of it is made up of what they've been calling this sort of dark energy and dark matter. And dark matter, they say, is about 83% of that difference. And dark energy is a force that's generated and fills the extra bit. And the difference with dark matter and dark energy is they don't respond to electromagnetic pulses. So a lot of our detectors and things struggle to see that sort of thing. So you go back to good old Einstein and his theory of relativity. He sort of identified that there were some anomalies. And so science now has been in pursuit of dark matter and dark energy to try and get a better understanding of the balance of the universe. And it sort of ties in again with some of the things that we talked about. What they need for some of the things is a more accurate clock. So there's a proposal for a new nuclear clock, I think, based on thorium. And when we talked about GPS systems, it's the only satellite location system that we've got at the moment on Earth. So when you're looking for that, one of the things that you need is a very precise clock. And so far, they've used sort of Earth-based clocks and transposed them, but a bit like the sort of story of finding longitude with new clocks developing that was a couple of hundred years, 300 years ago now. And these new clocks could help to free you from those static sort of ground-based clocks. But again, it's part of understanding, because again, they theorise that dark energy and dark matter might not respect time. Because in our universe, it's again, thanks to Einstein, is relative to where we are in the universe as to our understanding of time, or our sort of capacity for measuring time, or our belief in having measured time. It's the kind of thing where you can move across, and if you move faster and faster, you get closer to the yardstick that you're using to measure time. And that sort of spills over then into science fiction these days, and things like warp drives. So if you want to sort of find some of the weird theories that are emanating from people who've supposedly cracked the idea of warp drive, if again you need a yardstick to measure it, it's superluminal, which means it's measuring something faster than the speed of light. That's how you traveling vast distances in short times. And the theory is that it's very difficult to get to that. So it's been a hypothesis so far. And it's very much showing that where we thought we got an understanding of the universe and the mechanics of it, we've still got an awful lot to learn. So good news, sort of the study by Sheffield University. Also, across the world, there are people following, trying to evaluate, enumerate, get a handle on dark matter and dark energy. And all I think the grasp that we have of it is the theoretical impact on things that we can see in that small part of the galaxy that's visible to us. So again, we see gravitational issues, which can appear to warp the path of light, and it's sort of a very dark, sort of magical kind of effect that we're trying to put some values on.
It's interesting because you say about we only seen 5% of what's there.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? I think again, it's hypothesis at the moment, and that's really sort of due to these things like measuring distances and times and looking for anomalies. And if you've got an anomaly, then you can start to try and fit it into your perceived pattern of thoughts, and try and work out how and why something's happening. And again, so you know, by cracking that kind of a puzzle, we may also crack some of these things from science fiction, like time travel, but also particle sort of transmission, so the Star Trek transporter.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so it's one of those, I think, for mere mortals like me, it makes my head hurt.
Well, it's a difficult concept, isn't it? But you could imagine how time could move at different speeds.
I say it just kind of opens a can of worms from a theory of relativity, which we've all sort of adhered to for cracking on for 100 years. Yeah. So in terms of science, it's pretty new, but it's had a very, very strong base over that time. So to put some kind of question marks on it and then try and put answers to those question marks could take us into a different existence.
Concept of time is a very interesting one, Paul, because I remember reading an article about a woman who decided to see how a circadian clock would work if she went into darkness for 7 days without any indication of light, to know when you're hungry and everything like that. And it's a fascinating thing.
Yes, Well, it's, I mean, it's been studied quite a few times, and it's one of those things that they try to put people under duress when they're trying to get them to spill the beans about something.
So, yeah.
Take them away from that sort of 12 or 24-hour clock, and over quite a short period, really, people start to lock onto circadian rhythms more, which means that their concept of a week can be 3 days or 8 days or whatever their own particular sort of mechanism for time measuring is. But it's this whole thing of quantum physics, and we've tried talking about string theory in the past and a lot of things. So quantum physics is potentially at the boundary of giving us these supercomputers that will help us to make calculations that we couldn't have approached doing. But also, you know, the one of the things that's been dangled in front of us is artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. and the ability for that to think differently. So thing is, it may come up with the usual sort of 99 pieces of rubbish that it theorises, but then out of that can come the one sort of bit of theorising that makes one of these fundamental shifts of understanding.
It is, and Paul's just pointed out to me that casinos have no clocks, but they generally have no windows either. So you do, it's messing around with the concept of time.
Yeah, well, it is, but I think it's, keeping people stuck to slot machines or various gaming things. But I also read recently that's a bit of a fallacy now about the clocks, but it is. They're very much a capsule environment, if you go into one. And, I think that it is, our perceptions are quite interesting. So we're talking about an eclipse, and we can theorise about it, but I've just been trying to look straight at the sun, and it doesn't work. So you've got to come up with a way to actually give a value to the theory. And it used to be things like Stonehenge, apparently, were sort of astronomical calendars. So you could predict when spring started, which happened a week ago, two weeks ago. First day of new spring, and we're going to get the clock springing forward.
Yes, or marching forward. But it's an interesting one because, I don't know about you, Paul, but as soon as it's daylight, doesn't matter how many curtains you've got up or blinds, blackout blinds, as soon as, in fact, the birds are singing before it's light now, and as soon as it's light, well, I'm awake.
Yes.
Well,
but that's nature, isn't it?
It is, but also, there's things that, again, science is trying to understand. So there's a lot of research into muons, which are sort of particles that come through but actually travel through the Earth's crust, and they're trying to be able to map under the Earth's crust using muons or muon detectors. And who's to say that we don't have some kind of muon detector? so it passes through buildings, passes through sort of solid, what we consider
Ooh,
very solid environments. And, it's a bit like birds having some kind of a magnetic area in their brain.
Yes, they do.
So they can follow the magnetic curves around the Earth.
It's incredible. My mind's boggling, Paul, now. What have you been eating? what's set you on this path?
Well, I say it's sort of just looking at that sort of research from black holes and just saying, well, hang on a minute, maybe it's not the crushing end, maybe it's also a beginning.
Oh, I say, time travelling into another world.
Yeah, so, a lot of it usually is by your imagination, but science, unfortunately, wants to properly evaluate
wants
it.
Wants to nail it down, quantify it. Fantastic. We've got a great track to play you out. We could have chosen anything to do with dark energy and dark matter, but we've gone for a track by Collective Soul, which is nothing to do with being soul-y, and it's called Energy.
Sounds good.
It does.
Thank you, Paul. We'll speak to you
Monday, all being well, on Glory Days Rock Show, 1 till 3.
Look forward to
it. Bye-bye, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Mother and child, I'm such a man for a short while. Your promises be, the world just spins faster than me. Come on, come on, come on. And all of your friends, I hear a whispering. You left me for the government. And all of your friends are hopelessly. I wish you'd stop wasting all my energy.
Collective Soul there with a track called Energy. We played that because RPG was being very, very scientific and deep on this Saturday morning and talking about dark energy and dark matter. All good stuff. Of course, you're listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning from 11 until 12. All being well, we should have Chris Dale on the line. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Life Science Team.
Hello. We're very well. Thank you for joining us. You've had a very interesting week before we talk about your topic. Do you want to tell us?
Yes, I was coaching the Hallam University men's lacrosse team and we won 7-6 at varsity.
Wow.
So
hurrah.
It went down really well.
Well done.
Yeah. So a lot of hard work, Chris, for you.
Yeah, but enjoyable.
Enjoyable, great stuff. Now, for people who tune in regularly, they'll know over a year now you've been talking about ultra-processed food.
2.5 years now.
No way, two and a half years. Where does the time go? As PG was talking about, where's that 2.5 years gone, Chris?
Yeah.
If we're going to the darker side of the universe, will we get it back? Probably not. But you've been talking about ultra-processed foods, impact on health, and you're going to be talking today specifically about the world obesity crisis.
Yeah, there was a new study of global data published in the Lancet journal, and this study covered over 200 countries. And it was in all the newspapers, and it was on the BBC, so I thought it was a good topic maybe to talk around, bearing in mind all the programs that we've done before. So the headline is that more than half of all adults, a third of children, teenagers and young adults around the world are predicted to be overweight or obese by the year 2050. So that's in 25 years' time.
Yeah, indeed.
So that's the headline. The researchers warn that obesity levels are predicted to accelerate rapidly during the remainder of this decade, and particularly in lower income countries. And part of that reason is that factory processed food is cheaper and is marketed heavily in poorer income countries. And therefore, this food often replaces traditional food that are usually vegetable-based, or pure food, I think we call it,
yes.
Don't you, Julie?
Pure foods.
Yeah. So these experts say that if governments take action now, there is still time to prevent what they describe as a profound tragedy. And I think we've mentioned this before, that medical experts now believe that the impact of ultra-processed food is so bad, it now needs the most significant health intervention since tobacco was linked to cancer.
Yeah, it's quite startling because way back, the naysayers didn't think tobacco was a bad thing, particularly the tobacco companies, funnily enough.
Well, they spent millions on trying to convince everybody that there was not a problem, but... I think we all know how significant that problem was.
Yeah, well, I don't want to distract you from your talk, Chris, but we, dare I confess, ended up going into McDonald's. It's a long story.
Did you?
We went in, and shame on us, and we regretted it, but there was a girl in there, and I thought she was waiting for somebody else. She got two meals, in for all intents and purposes, two packs of fries, two burgers, two this stuff, and she sat and ate the entire lot herself. Because it was like, I think there was a deal on, so she bought two meal deals.
Wow.
And I just thought that's just one example. And that's like normal.
Well, just to be, I have to confess, I had a sausage sandwich.
Oh, again.
Yeah, I know.
But
I know.
Honestly,
good on you.
For a year, at least a year, probably more than a year, we've never been near McDonald's.
Well, we actually went to we had a pizza takeaway for the first time in about 4 years, and we couldn't eat it because it was so salty.
Do you know, we bitterly regretted it. It was just like, ooh, no. You know, I think we're used to not eating it. I think that's a problem. But the thing is, the meal deals are so cheap, Chris. This is it.
Well, that leads us very nicely on to the rest of what I'm here to talk about, because in 2021, it was estimated that a significant percentage of global adult population, which was about 1 billion men and 1.1 billion women aged 25 or older, were overweight or obese. So that's a significant a large proportion of the population. And the proportion of both men and women living with obesity has doubled since 1990, which is incredible. So they say if the trend continues, global rates of overweight and obese adults would rise to about 57.4% for men and 60% of women by 2050. And in terms of raw numbers, that would be in China, 627 million, in India, 450 million people, and then in the USA, 214 million people would be overweight or obese by 2050.
Blimey.
So the population growth that the forecast forecasters are really sort of predicting where this will hit will be the sub-Sahara Africa. And they think that the population is going to rise there to something in the order of 522 million. And when we spoke, I think it was about December in 2023, we spoke about the impact of the Western diet on the Haudenosaunee, which is the indigenous Red Indians. And that impact on their diet was over a period of 150 years. And what the researchers have done is they've looked at the impact on India in the last 35 years. So we spoke about the Red Indians having this thrifty gene that helped them retain fat during the leaner months. This thrifty gene applies to countries where they have lower income.
Yes.
And the abundance of food is strictly linked to the market economy. So if you don't have money, you can't eat. So it means that a lot of these populations have this thrifty gene, and the impact on health from ultra-processed food is a lot more significant in those countries.
Yeah.
So what this study has done is it's looked at what happened in India. It looks at what's happened where there's been lower income, and then it's extrapolated that to look at the impact across the expanding populations in other countries. The study also said that in Nigeria, that sort of stood out, that they are predicting that the number of obese people will triple from 36 million in 2021 to 141 million in 2050. And that would make it the country with the fourth largest population of adults that are overweight.
Yeah, it's a massive country, Nigeria. I think it's got the biggest population of Africa.
Yeah, and it's, then just to sort of go back and just explain what I was saying about India, because we spoke about that, didn't we, so quite some time ago, about the impact of the Western diet in modern India. But experts know this can happen very quickly in a country because they've got the evidence of the impact of the ultra-processed food. And the fast food industry has been very quick to establish itself in India. And we're talking about McDonald's, KFC, yeah. Burger King, Pizza Hut and Domino's. And Haagen-Dazs ice cream is also becoming increasingly popular, which is, has a lot of sugar in it. And they say that the fast food market in India is already worth around $20 billion a year. And that's set to increase to $45 billion by 2050. That's going to over double in the next 25 years. So to give a context to that, before 1991, the percentage of obese people in India was less than 1%. And by 2000, for the year 2000, it increased to 6%. And in 2025, this has now grown to 18%. So there's been an 18 times increase in obesity in 35 years.
Yeah,
and the biggest increase is amongst children of wealthy and middle class people, and it's directly linked to fast food and sugary drinks in particular.
Because they can afford them.
Yeah, but actually what the study did say is that in India it was, you know, potentially people with money, but what they're saying is that if they extrapolate it forward now, they say it'll be targeting countries with low incomes.
Yes.
And populations with low incomes. Because ultra-processed food is so much cheaper than normal food.
It is. And when I come back to this McDonald's, the meal deals are very, very cheap. Mm. So you can see they've got the power to market at those groups.
Absolutely. And they're experts. I mean, obviously, they're experts at it, aren't they? So, one of the things about the study, which, like we say, covered more than 200 countries, is that the predictions did not take into account the impact of, say, new weight loss medications might have or education programs might have. And those sort of could play a significant role in the future. But even so, it's still very worrying.
Because
even, you know, you spoke earlier in the program, didn't you, about people having to be weighed and
yes,
it's one of these things that's coming in. So maybe finally there is going to be intervention on this.
But people, if you know, going to your GP and they weigh you, you're overweight, you need to lose weight, people are going to say, well, you know, I'm not, or I can't afford it. I can't afford fresh food. It's cheaper to go and buy processed food. The government, well, we might come on to that, but the government needs to be starting to target policies and strategies. It's all right saying leave it up to the individuals, but the companies that went into India, they knew exactly what they were doing, and they're selling an image as well, aren't they?
Of course they are.
You know, Stormzy now is been in adverts for McDonald's. Stormzy with a burger. You know, it's you know, it's making it look glamorous, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and you know, some of the stars of music and film have also been in. So, you know, food delivery advertisements and that sort of stuff as well, which just makes it so much easier for people to access it. And of course, we know it's highly addictive as well.
Yeah, because you get used to eating a lot of sugar, a lot of salt. Then when you make your own, you get used to eating, you make your own food, you control all that. When you then eat processed food, you're like, whoa, this is salty or this is sweet.
Yeah, like I said, we couldn't finish a takeaway pizza from a fairly well-known pizza company. We just couldn't eat it because it was so salty.
But, yeah, it's well, interesting.
Fact, what you're talking about there, Julie, was also picked up in this report. And the experts say that if government take urgent action now, there is still time to prevent what could be a disaster for vulnerable healthcare systems.
Yes.
And particularly those in lower-income countries. And the research was led by a leading professor from the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington in the US. And this is what she said. She said, governments can use our country-specific estimates on stage timing and speed and forecasted transition in weight to identify priority populations experiencing the greatest burdens of obesity who require immediate intervention and treatment. And those remain predominantly overweight should be primarily targeted with prevention strategies. And this is what she said, and this is a leading expert. The unprecedented global epidemic of overweight and obesity is a profound tragedy and a monumental society failure.
Yeah.
And just to give sort of some context to that, we go back to India, which sort of gives a little bit of context to what she was saying. The majority of Indian deaths now are due to heart disease, and 60% of people with heart disease now also have diabetes. It's estimated by 2050, India will be a world leader with diabetes, with an estimated 130 million cases annually. In addition, given the expanding wealth, there is an expectation there will also be a significant increase in obesity, hypertension, heart disease, strokes, and a number of cancers. Now, when you look at it like that and you think about India, that really its explosion in terms of, you know, being accessing the Western diet really only started in around 1990, 1991. It's sort of 35 years, and in 35 years, there's an 18 times the obesity. And now they're saying that the majority of Indian deaths are now caused by heart disease that's linked to diet.
Yeah, whereas a lot of those countries would have eaten a vegetarian or vegan diet even. So it's a big transition.
It is, and the other thing, of course, is that a lot of people worked and did a lot of manual work, and those jobs are now being replaced with desk work.
Yes.
So computers and call centres and that sort of thing. So people are living more sedentary lifestyles, and then on top of that, they're eating more and more of this ultra-processed food. So it's a bit of a double whammy, really.
It is, and interesting, you mentioned about the article saying their research does not take into account the impact that new weight loss medications might have. I think that's a really worrying one because, okay, you eat a load of bad food, you become very obese, and you're given drugs to lose weight, like a Zempic or whatever it is, it doesn't mean you're healthy or your body's got enough nutrition.
No, well, that's something I'm not perhaps qualified to say.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one. It's about that whole, you know, that whole process of what health is. Because you mentioned, I think, on a previous time you came on, some children are obese, but they're also malnourished because
that's right.
They've got no vitamins, yep. minerals, so yep. they feel bad because they haven't got the right
food.
Bits to grow. But it's addictive, Chris. You know, you see it all the time. All Greg's driving. Greg's. We confess. We haven't been to Greg's for nearly a year.
Well, we don't have any evidence of that.
We've got trust us, but you know,
honest.
You know, kids growing up, Chris. You talked about children. You know, the impact of diet in the womb before they're even born.
Oh, sugar! Yeah, the impact of sugar before children were born. Yeah,
so children are growing up, and the palate, the foods they're eating and are given, that's dictating their palate from a very young age. And what chance have they got if you then give them a homemade, something that isn't full of sugar and salt?
And, you know, one of the last really healthy diets that a lot of children and young adults have was during the World War II, during rationing.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it, would you?
The amount of, you know, that the food that they were eating was pure food. It was a lot of sort of cabbage and greens.
What you could grow.
Mince and onions and that sort of thing, and sugar and butter and saturated fat was almost non-existent in the diet. So children were actually, although sometimes hungry, had the right nutrition and were healthy.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think back, and Paul will talk about this, very rarely back in the 60s would you see any overweight children or many overweight people. That was abnormal.
Yeah, you know? Well, do you know what, Julie? You go to Meadowhall Shopping Centre now, and all the way through the Meadowhall Shopping Centre, there are fast food places selling cakes, sweets, donuts, sugary drinks. And if you walk around Meadowhall, you just see people walking along, eating it.
Yeah.
You know, and children in particular, just eating sugary stuff. And it really, you know, people say it's a treat, but
it's not a treat anymore.
Yeah, when it was 60 years ago, you might have one of those a month or one of those every 6 months.
Yes.
Now people are having them as a treat daily, and it's now no longer a treat.
No, it's their normal diet. You know, it's interesting. Somebody we know wanted to lose weight, and I was thinking about Dan Hennessy, who came on, one of your friends came on, I think last year, and talked about his weight and what he did to improve his diet, and he lost a lot of weight. You know, somebody said to us they were trying to lose weight, and I just said to them, you know what, one of the best things you could probably do, cut as much ultra-processed food out of your diet and start eating pure foods, and it'll make you feel better, and you might feel that you don't need to eat as much because they fill you up. And I remember thinking that Dan mentioned, find something that makes you feel full, and he said, full fat Greek yogurt. Now we eat zero fat Greek yogurt, but it does make you feel full.
Yeah, we're very proud of Dan, aren't we? He's done really well and made sort of significant changes to his diet. But it's mainly just eating healthy things.
It is, but it's find something that makes you feel full. And a lot of people I've been reading about, Chris, follow what Dan Hennessy said. Yogurt, natural yogurt. Don't get the yogurts, the low-fat yogurts with all the, you know, preservatives. Also, they say if you've got time, boil yourself some hot, you know, eggs, hard-boiled eggs, or cut yourself up some cubes of cheese.
Yeah,
pure foods, and that'll make you feel full and stop you wanting to go and get your snacks.
Yeah, and of course they market and encourage us to have snacks because they want us to eat more, because they want us, they also food industry
but it,
want
but
to
it's
sell
like
more.
Smoking, isn't it, Chris? It's in the interest of the smoking company. I was reading about vaping, for example. Some of the vapes contain as much nicotine as 20 cigarettes, and kids are addicted because they think it's sweet, you know. So the companies, you know, in summary, it's the companies have got a lot of power, haven't they?
Yeah, well, I think governments around the world need to act very soon on this because, as we said right at the start, medical experts now believe the impact of ultra-processed food is so bad it now needs the most significant health intervention since tobacco was linked to cancer.
Well said, Chris. Great stuff as usual, Chris. Thank you for joining us and sharing your thoughts on this. And we're going to play out with a track you've picked. And I don't know where you found it, but it's a very interesting track. It's by Faithless and it's Fatty Boo.
All right. Have a great weekend,
Brilliant.
Everyone.
You too. Bye-bye, Chris.
Bye.
Fatty Boo, give her name Lisa. She no have no boyfriend, she love up the fridge freezer. Triple chin, no facial hair, she favor geezer. All of she friend recommend certain cream and freezer. She favorite tipple is Bacardi Breezer. Claim she 31, but no one believe her. Love her on a restaurant with yeah. She friend Anita. You should meet her, Anita's another big eater. Fitness for the waiter, them is always a feature. When them run and go carry food for them two creature. One night she come so much rice, she nearly have a seizure. Fall off she chair, lick she head, and catch amnesia. Wake up in A&E, and ballo she want pizza. Doctors quickly sign paper and release. Car, no police to police. Fatty Boo, you better pray nobody sees you.
People love the things that you do. Say no, you got plenty, but the plenty could be few. This is my chance to shout it in at the avenue. Say don't you be a sinner, don't you keep all for you. Yeah, I said a long time now you start for a miserable. Every little dime, every nickel, you are trouble. Watch your little head, Fatty Boo, and give the dog the bone that could never be for you.
Nickname Fatty Boo, but we call her Mel. Life changed forever when she discovered Chanel. Now she has a mind to buy designer apparel. She no favorite gazelle, but she bounce like hell whenever she spy you something to die for on the fashion Chanel.
17
and one like Tinkerbell. Patty big like two church bell in parallel. Cat walk and Mel never match up too well, but Fatty was soul she couldn't be told. She loved muggle with her big lip drifting the cold. Even bolder than the skinny girl's shoulderless, and admired everywhere for her openness.
Microphone, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Be careful of the things that you do. Say no, you got plenty, but the plenty could be few. This is my chance to shout it in at the avenue. Say don't you be a sinner, don't you keep all for you. Yeah, I said a long time now you start to miserable. Every little time, every nickel, you are trouble. Watch your little head, Fatty Boo, and give the dog the bone that could never be for you. Be for you. Careful of the things that you do. Say no, you got plenty, but the plenty could be few. Be few. Yeah, I said a long time now you start going miserable. Watch your little head, Fatty Boo, and give the dog the bone that could never be for you. You people love the things that you do. Say no, you got plenty, but the plenty could be few. This is my chance to shout it in at the avenue. Say don't you be a sinner, don't you keep all for you. Yeah, I said a long time now you start going miserable. Every little time, every nickel, you are trouble. Watch your little head, Fatty Boo, and give the dog the bone that could never be for you.
Finally, Fatty Boo used to be me in 73. Saturday night playing the music at my father's party. 6 records on the change of it with Dan Setti. Stereogram, 6 years old and I'm the man. Steady with Calypso to start then. Play reggae, 1,000 volts of host.
for everybody. In the days when R&B men, Arthur Conley, Otis Redding, Booker T and the MG, every little piece of attention I would try to squeeze from my father, his friends and their family. Sometimes deliberately tease with a tune that won't please, and the whole room reaction set my young heart at ease. There used to be black suits and shirts with skinny ties, and they was wise and funny and funny and wise. Staying up late and playing the music with grown-ups was my prize. The little fat kid with sparkling eyes.
This is the fearless sound.